My name is Michael Bowen, and I'll be hosting today. And I'm fortunate to be sitting here, none other than 42nd Street Pete himself.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
And I'm very happy to have this opportunity to speak with Pete. He's become well known to many of you as a film preservationist and also historian of 42nd Street culture, as well as the adult cinema. So I feel lucky today to get a chance to talk with Pete and find out more about who the heck he is and how he got to be 42nd Street Pete, something I think you'll all find to be very interesting. Well, Pete, my first question for you might just set the tone for the whole interview, and I don't know, you can run with it all you want, but I'm sure people out there would like to know who the heck you are and where you came from. Where did you start your life, and how did you finally drift onto 42nd Street many years ago? And then I'm sure I'll have a lot of questions after that.
I've been called the bastard son of a thousand bad movies and stuff like that. But I grew up in, born in 52, grew up in the 60s, went through the era of free love, and I found out love is never free, so scratch that whole thing off the itinerary.
Okay.
Pretty much, you know, I went through high school. It sucked, but I stayed with it, and back in the 70s, you know, there was such a thing going on as the Vietnam War.
Yep.
And there was such a thing as a draft, where it wasn't like you volunteer like you do today. It was like, guess what? You're going to go work for the fucking army.
And you were susceptible to that
basically classified 1A, all 265 fat pounds of me, flat feet and all. And when I graduated high school, I was actually a meat cutter for the A&P doing that part-time.
Okay.
And I found out that was a nowhere situation, too. And, you know, with the whole thing, everybody's going, why don't you go to college? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I go, well, I got this albatross hanging over my head, the sword of Damocles, so to speak, with Vietnam. Because right. You never know when you're going to get called up or anything like that.
Sure.
So when I was working for the A&P, I ran into these two guys named Billy and Ronnie who had been drinking over in the city. Now, I had been drinking over in the city when I was like 14 years old,
going
to school and going over. Basically, we were shooting over to the West Village and getting served at places like the Back Fence, Whitey's, the Red Witch, you know, things like that. And one day, I got to Port Authority. Instead of making the left turn to go down to the subway to the Village, or the right turn, rather, I made the left turn and went up in the corner of 42nd and 8th.
Okay.
And then I looked down this block and I'm like looking at these marquees with stuff like Night of the Living Dead, the Ghastly Ones, Payment in Blood, all the spaghetti western biker films and things like that. And I'm like, wow, this is fucking great. This is like the smorgasbord is right in front of me.
Yeah.
Then if you went down 8th Avenue, you just hit a twisted netherworld of all these old porn grinders like the Capri, the Venus, the Cameo, Park Miller and places like that.
Yeah. For people who aren't from that time or who can't visualize it, that part of 42nd Street, which I think people called the Deuce or the 40
yeah.
Deuce then,
the
it
Deuce.
Was it was literally one
theater right after the
after other. Like the yeah. marquee is like bing, bing.
Yeah.
You can't believe it. It's like an ocean of movie
yeah, pretty
theaters.
Pretty much, you know, piled on top of each other and interspersed between the big grind houses were the shoebox or the storefront theaters.
Okay.
That, you know, basically they were just porn grinders and sometimes they ran nudist camp films. Sometimes they ran softcore stuff. They had, you know, the ass numbing metal folding chairs and wooden folding chairs and things like that.
Okay.
Sometimes it was a buck to get in. You were guaranteed 2 to 3 hours of, you know, whatever. And you know, and I say whatever is because they never advertised what it was.
You just wander in and
yeah.
take your chances. Were they usually showing loops and stuff like that? Was that the
yeah.
normal program
yeah,
for those places?
You know, they had a record player or a cassette player playing because there was no sound to these things. A lot of nudie cutie stuff, a lot of nudist camp stuff. One place even showed travelogues for some strange reason. Because I can remember if you walked up 42nd, there was the Mermaid, Cine 42, Mask, things like
those
that.
Those were way on the west side.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So, you know, you hit them. Then, of course, you had, you know, your big grind houses, the Victory, the Liberty, the Empire, New Amsterdam, the Harris, the Apollo, the Times Square Theater. Then, you know, little Avon things interspersed, like the Avon 7, the Avon 42nd.
Sure.
So, you know, then you had your little, you know, they had the little adult bookstores sandwiched in there, you know, the peep shows and things like that. Massage parlors. So it was basically a smorgasbord, you know, for out-of-towners.
So when you first showed up on 42nd Street, we're talking about the late 60s here?
Yeah,
or?
I'd say 68 I started going over
okay,
there.
So that's before hardcore.
Yeah.
But they still had all of this sexploitation
oh,
stuff
yeah.
going
on. It was just coming on. Screwed just came out, I believe.
I think 68 or 9 it started. Yeah, right around that time.
Yeah, I think so. It might have been earlier. I'm not sure. Because the reason I knew Screw was because they used to run this stuff on TV all the time. We got to clean up Times Square. And Screw would just come out and they were using Screw as a bad example.
Okay.
Which basically made me want to read it because it told you where to go, where not to go. You know, it was the yardstick for what was going on.
Sure.
So, you know, that was always a help, too.
Right.
And then
Had you been what people call a movie buff before you discovered 42nd Street?
Oh, yeah, big time. Growing up, you know, everybody has cable, DVD. You know, people don't understand we had 13 channels, only which 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, and 11 worked.
Right.
And that was rabbit ears, antennas. You had to adjust the thing. You had a big fucking wooden box with a screen with 8 knobs. You had it horizontal, vertical, contrast, whatever. By the time you adjusted everything, sat down, the fucker would roll again. You had to get up and do it.
Sure. And if you wanted to see a movie, you sat your ass down at 2 o'clock in the morning when it was on, and it might not be on again for 5 years, and there was no way to see it,
yeah,
right?
See, back then there was no 2 o'clock in the morning, because I figure I started – my interest peaked with movies in general. I was in Catholic school.
Okay, and this would have been in the 60s. Yeah, in the
60s. And they were running Frankenstein. Now, I wasn't allowed to see Frankenstein. As a matter of fact, the school told the parents that, keep your kids away from this film.
Okay.
And when you think of it, here's the weird segue. Frankenstein was only 2 killings as far as I can remember in Frankenstein. Fritz the Hunchback and a little girl. 2 killings. That was bad. We couldn't see this shit. But we're raised on Jungle Jim, Ramar, King of the Jungle, all these cowboy shoot-em-ups where people are getting mowed down like wheat.
Yeah.
But yet 2 killings in a Frankenstein where we couldn't see.
Right.
So I'd sneak home, go upstairs, and fuck with the TV a little bit to catch a little bit of it. I got to see some of it. But we weren't allowed to see this shit.
Right.
So, but we were allowed to see Abbott and Costello.
Yep.
So one day, I'm, you know, kid out playing with my friends. They go, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein's on at 4 o'clock. It's a Saturday. So I'm like, okay, I'm allowed to see that. And I'm not going to mention the Frankenstein
check
part.
The Frankenstein out.
So I go home. Yeah, okay. But they're watching something. I can catch it later. Well, when I caught it, was the climactic battle between all the monsters and shit. So now I knew how the Wolfman was, Dracula, the Invisible Man, all this shit.
Right.
So now, you know, the floodgates were open. So it was still, you know, you're not allowed to watch. Then Chiller Theater came on.
Those Universal horror films really ruined a lot of good young men, I would say.
I know. Look at the way I turned out.
I had the same experience.
Yeah. So then, you know, you got Chiller Theater was on Saturday night at 9 o'clock. And if I was good, which meant I was good in school, which I wasn't, I get to watch what they perceived wasn't threatening.
Right.
So I got through that. And then, you know, Channel 9 threw Supernatural Theater on, which had the crawling eye and things like that. Now, the other thing was that Channel 9 had something called Million Dollar Movie. And what that was is they'd run the same film every night for a week and twice on Saturdays.
Okay, interesting.
And they ran stuff like Attack of the Crab Monsters, House on Haunted Hill, all these cool horror movies. And the best thing about being, you know, watching when you were a kid was if you got the shit scared out of you the first night, you could turn it off and pick it up again the second night until you got scared again.
Okay.
And if you were really chicken shit, you get it on weekends. So we got that. And then, you know, you get further into the 60s, Channel 7 had this thing called The Big Show at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And they picked up the AIP library. So one day it was monsters. One day it was westerns. One day it was war movies. So you got to see like stuff like Day the World Ended, Earth vs. a Spider, Amazing Colossal Man. So I got my education that way. Then, you know, like you said, 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, most of the stuff back then kicked off at 1.
Okay.
You'd have, you know, your late night movie at 11:30, the late show was it, I think.
Right.
Know, the late show. Go on till 1 o'clock. They played a national anthem, have the sermonette, and then test patterns.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm thinking more of the 70s when I was watching these shows. And in the Boston area, they were starting to broadcast all night long then. Yeah, and of course, since no one was up, all they did was grind these old 16-millimeter TV movies all night.
Well, that was the beauty of it, because when you got into the late 60s, early 70s, they had gone into like 4 in the morning. And they had these cool little showcases like the Great, Great, Great Show, the Late, Late, Late Show.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
They had something else, Nightmare Festival, where they had some of the Universal stuff. So basically, they were using stuff for filler that I've never seen before.
Right.
Like Stakeout on Dope Street, Shack Out on 101, some spaghetti westerns came in, Gunfighters at Casa Grande, Minnesota Clay. So here I'm getting all primed, you know, for this stuff. And then there's another thing that I didn't mention was the kiddie matinees, which were basically, they ran these locally in these big old grindhouses. And they were a babysitter because for a buck, you could drop your kids off. And I mean, drop your kids off. You don't have to be with them. Nobody fucked with you back then. Not like today. You drop a kid off, he disappears.
Right. And these theaters there were still a lot of neighborhood theaters
at
that time.
Yeah.
So you weren't that far from your house probably. Yeah.
So we get dropped off and all they knew it was a kiddie matinee. 3 cartoons, the big Warner Brothers ones, 3 Stooges short, and 2 movies.
Right.
They never asked what movies we were seeing. So the first time we went was Curse of Frankenstein, Horror of Dracula. So I said to my brother, I go, we ain't fucking saying nothing about this, are we? So we would go every weekend. It was the Embassy Theater in Orange, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
That was like my flagship grindhouse. And we saw everything on a big screen. The two Creature from the Black Lagoon movies, the
Fantastic.
AIP stuff, the Real Art re-releases. So then, you know, you get your driver's license. I became 17 in 1970. Then it was hit the drive-ins. So that was a whole new education.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but I always went back to 42nd Street.
When you were going to the drive-in, were they doing double and triple bills then?
Oh, yeah.
I remember triple bills a lot when I, you know, the drive-ins were just going out when I first started going, but I had a couple good years. It was always a triple bill, and you never knew what the hell you'd see, and there was never any theme.
Yeah, they used to run the themes when I was going. Like, they had that Ted Michaels deal, Spend the Night in a Grave, where they had the Corpse Grinders, the Undertaker and his pals, and the Embalmer, and sometimes they switched it off with the Worm Eaters.
It's like a package he probably put together as a distributor, though. Yeah. I just remember these catch-all things that would have, like, a early teen sex comedy, and then some European horror film. Yeah. You never had any idea how they got
together. Our buddy Sam Sherman, you know, with Independent International.
Sure.
They would have these Blood-O-Rama Shock shows. What they have was either three or four films with blood in the title.
Yep.
But you never knew what they were. They would show clips from Brides of Blood, Blood Demon, Mad Doctor of Blood Island, Beast of Blood. All this, any of that stuff. And, you know, like I say, you'd get three movies, but you never know what they were till you got there.
Right. So this was the kind of stuff they were screening when you started going to the drive.
Oh, yeah. And then it also ran into grindhouses, too, like 42nd Street and stuff like that. Because I remember the Ted Michaels things running over there, the Blood Island stuff running over there, all kinds of things like that.
Yeah. Drive-in culture, again, something almost completely lost. There are typically a couple of drive-ins somewhere out there, but it just...
I wound up managing Livingston Drive-In, and I believe it was 73.
Oh.
And I thought this was going to be the dream job. Guess again. You had to come in 10 o'clock in the morning, fuck around till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, like repair speakers, do paperwork, then go home and come back at 5 and stay, well, whatever.
Okay.
Problem with Livingston Drive-In was it showed shit. It was more cerebral. You got Disney movies, you got stuff like Executive, I don't know, some Day of the Jackal, things like that. But as an employee manager, I could go anywhere I wanted because I had a pass. So I would spend my days off going to the better drive-ins and seeing the better grindhouse
Interesting.
Stuff. Yeah, because like Morris Plains showed Andy Milligan stuff. Troy Hill showed Herschel G. Lewis stuff.
Wow.
Union had the black exploitation stuff. So you know, it was diverse, but like I said, Livingston got the shits. That's what it came down to.
Okay.
And you hated Disney night.
Did you spend a lot of time busting kids for trying to sneak kids in the trunk, or did you?
No, because I was an aficionado. That's what we used to do. And the funny part was, the first week I was at Livingston Drive-In, we had Russ Meyer films.
Oh, wow.
And there was a lot of car accidents during the Russ Meyer films, because when you crested the hill to go to Livingston, all you would see is Uschi Dygart's tits on the screen, 500 feet
fucking
wide,
tits.
And you hear the brakes squeal and bang. The town asked them not to book that stuff anymore.
Right.
That's when it went downhill for me. But that was the first week I worked there, was the Russ Meyer Film Festival.
Okay. Like, there were a lot of legal cases around, you know, visibility and nudity at drive-ins at that time.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that's what they always said. The big problem was that people would drive off the road.
Oh, yeah. A rack like Ushi's, you know. You know, I don't know how big the screen was. I'm going to say a few hundred feet.
You need a screen that big.
It's like a billboard of tits. So, yeah. That was a lot of fun. Fantastic. And then, you know, you were doing that. You were bringing a cooler full of booze, you know, to the theaters and stuff like that, and sitting there and getting hammered. And then it was basically the same thing in the grindhouses. They never bother you in a grindhouse, because people say, well, you know, how come you hate modern theaters? You can't smoke there. You can't drink there. You can't get laid there. Yeah, and they never bothered you. You really have to do something fucked up to get thrown out.
Right.
And they never bothered you, so it was never enforced.
Now, when you were first going into these theaters, well, I guess the question I have is, did the clientele for these theaters change from the time you first went to them on 42nd Street until the time the hardcore came in, you know, later on in the 70s? Because you hear a lot of wild stories about crazy people and whatnot in these porn theaters, but I don't know when that started.
Well, the softcore stuff, I don't remember too much going on with the softcore stuff, because I remember going to the Avon Hudson, which used to show a lot of Nick Phillips' stuff, and a lot of his early stuff was softcore. It was more sedate. People didn't, you know, for far as I'm concerned, people just stayed away from each other, sat by themselves, and either yanked it or watched it or whatever the hell they were doing.
If they were jerking off, it was sort of covert, though.
Yeah.
There wasn't like wild sex going on.
No, that came later.
Okay, great.
You know, down the road. But it was more, see, your porn customer is a timid guy by nature anyway.
Okay.
You know, there's always that you know, phobia or stigma of doing this stuff. So guys didn't want to be seen and things like that. So, you know, the softcore stuff, you never had much action, you know, flashers and stuff like that. But you know, not anything really going nuts in the theater. It was only back, you know, when he started getting hardcore, and then with the plethora of drugs that was around in the 70s, especially Angel Dust.
Okay.
Because that fucked people up and made them go nuts. Then you'd see like outbursts and things like that. Plus, you also had hookers work in the theaters too.
Okay.
Because, you know, some chick would walk up to you, want anything for $5, and I go, yeah, you to leave. You know, so deal with things like that. And then, you actually see things like that, because these chicks, they were brazen back then. You can get away with a lot of shit.
You give them $5, they just go down on you right there in your seat, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, not a problem.
Right. I heard too, this is getting into the 70s, but in fact, an interesting book by Samuel Delaney, Chip Delaney, who also wrote science fiction, Times Square Red, Times Square Blue, and he talks about gay guys cruising a lot of these straight theaters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they, you know, that wasn't for money, that was for fun. And
there was a fear. It's weird because you say that, because I used to go to the Melody Burlesque a lot, Harmony Burlesque, to change names and stuff.
Sure.
And with a bunch of guys wanting to take a leak, and this guy with a suit on comes next to me. He goes, pretty quiet in here tonight, ain't it? And I go, depends what you're looking for. And he goes, I'm looking for you to come back to Brooklyn with me. And I just turn around and I says, you're lucky you asked me instead of the guys I'm with, because I'm not going to knock your fucking teeth out. But if you ask them, they will. So I said, I'd advise you to leave.
Right.
And another place that was really bad, you know, good or bad, whatever your thing is, remember Blackjack Books in the middle of the Deuce?
Don't remember it personally, but it's very well known. I've read about it quite a bit. Sure. That was one of the big, big, big adult bookstores right there.
Yeah, but
it was
also a big gay cruise scene, because what would happen is all these minority hustlers would be hanging out in front. I never picked up on this. So I had a guy I knew. He was a guy named Leon, career sex worker. Not a performer, but like a cashier, bouncer type guy.
Okay.
Because a couple of massage parlors, I went, he'd frisk me. You know, hey, how you doing, Leon? Okay, I got to pat you down. Do it. Okay, no problem.
Right.
So he was telling me, you know, I'm standing out front bullshit, and I go, a lot of guys out here, and I go, he goes, they're selling meat. And I go, where the hell are they keeping it? He goes, you're a dumb shit. He goes, I'm talking about sex, damn it. I go, what do you mean? He goes, watch. So you see this guy, Wall Streeter, walk up to one of these Hispanic dudes that's wearing pants that are like three sizes too tight for
a t-shirt.
They make some kind of deal, go upstairs, and I go, what's going on? He goes, they go up to the peep booth, the guy gives him $10, and he blows the guy.
Right.
I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? He goes, yeah, but they are. And he says, you know, how many guys would get hit over the head, you know, when they're doing it and get ripped off and shit? And it was the danger aspect of it that attracted some of these guys, I think.
Right.
At least that's what I was told.
So they were using the peep show booths, basically, as a place to turn tricks.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow.
So that was a little creepy, too. You know? You never know. I mean, I had one guy, there was a place called Less Girls. It was way up 42nd going down toward, it was a new place too. I think the same guy's Brasiano owned Show World, if I remember right, Robert or Richard. And I think that was part of his thing too, as a chain. And I went in a booth one time, and there's this guy outside this booth, and he's trying to get in for some reason. So I back kicked the door, hit him in the face, and broke his nose. Guy was a big gay black guy, and he's like, you just hurt me, that was wrong. And I says, what the fuck are you trying to do getting in the booth? I just wanted some company. Leave now.
So
you get that too. You never know. You know.
Did the booths, the peep show booths, did they tend to have like a door that closed or just a curtain?
Depending on where you went, in the early days, there were these big hump machines.
Okay.
Like the old Nickelodeons where it was a viewer and you stuck your eyeballs into the viewer.
Peep viewer right into it. I know what you mean.
Yeah, those I remember being down on 8th Avenue somewhere. Then it was, they all switched over to the booths where you could click the door. A couple of them, the older places, the early ones, were curtains.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you closed the door,
some had a light.
And you could tell if someone was in there.
Yeah, like I remember Show World, they all had lights. If you went in and once you put the quarter in, the light went on.
So people knew not to come in there.
Exactly.
Or to try to come in there, depending on what they were looking for.
Yeah, exactly. So,
can you explain to people, too, how the peep shows work? Because we're talking, once again, about antique technology. It doesn't seem that way to us. But these booths were all showing film loops.
Yeah.
Right? So can you explain how that worked?
Well, you put a quarter in. What they do is they'd rig up an 8mm projector with the loop. And the quarter would trigger the thing to go off. It would run for about, I'd say, maximum 3 minutes before you had to feed in another quarter. Then it would shut off.
Okay.
Now, we had one of the projectors here, one of the old ones. And what they did was, I'm not so sure about the early days because I didn't have, you know, the connections back then. But basically what these things were, it was a heavy-duty 8mm projector with a cartridge. And the cartridge had two 8mm films on it.
Okay.
And it would key into the projector. Everything would be wired to the projector where it would click in X amount of time, then shut off. And that's how it would work. Of course, if the projector broke, you were fucked for the quarter because none of these guys would give you your money back anyway.
And was it a rear projection setup, like the little projector was just shooting onto a screen that you were – wasn't shooting over your shoulder or anything. It was on the other side of the wall. Was that the idea?
No, I think it was. I'm trying to think where it was. It might have been at the base pointing up, but you just got a screen.
Okay.
You know, that type of thing.
Okay.
I wasn't too hip on the mechanics of it till I was, you know, talking about guys with Show World where they had hired – basically, Show World was the cutting edge. It was built on the corner of 42nd and 8th undercover. Nobody knew what was going on. They put it up. They put a lot of money in it. It basically, believe it or not, they said it upgraded the neighborhood because instead of all this rotten wood and stuff like that, you had formica and stainless steel.
Yeah.
And these guys, you know, they invented the dial a doll, the window thing, where, you know, you go in, this chick would be basically pheasant under glass approach where her deal was try to con you into feeding this thing dollars while she played with herself with a dildo stripped down. And, you know, the more you could feed in and encourage you to jerk off.
Okay.
So you got like maybe.
And if you ran out of money, something closed.
Yeah,
so
the
you
screen
couldn't
came
see
down.
Her anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how that would work.
Right.
And then they had the open window peeps where for a while they had a window in it, but then they took it out. And what was happening was these chicks were getting really out of control because it was like, you know, who wanted to suck a tit, who wanted to eat some pussy, who wanted to lick some chick's ass.
Right. They get extra tips for this,
oh, yeah,
presumably.
Yeah. But the way that the thing was done, it was a worm gear that brought the window up and down.
Okay.
So it when it hit the bottom, if there was something in front of it, it wouldn't stop. So these guys were like getting blown, and all of a sudden the thing goes down on their dick, and they had, you know.
Dick.
Yeah.
Right.
I heard
right.
a lot of stories about that. And then the heat from the law made, you know, Showworld put the things back in, the glass back in. They said, fuck it. But Blackjack wouldn't because the money was too good.
Okay.
And then I'm thinking, oh, yeah, you're going in a booth. And, you know, how many guys have sucked on that tit before you? And who's got tuberculosis and all that? Peepland was nuts, too, like that. Because I was in one booth, and I could see across to the other booth, and some guy's eating some chick's asshole.
Right.
Right across. And I'm like, oh, this is really hygienic and shit. One place actually had a sink where you go back there and gargle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can't remember which one it was.
They really took care of their clients.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did they provide, you know, a roll of paper towels or a box of tissues or something in these peep booths?
No.
I mean, the floor must have been nasty.
Well,
after
there was
a
rule of thumb if you're in a peep booth. If you drop a quarter and hits with a splat, don't bother picking it up. That was a rule of thumb. No, they never gave you nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing.
There were no real, outside of Show World, there were no real high-class peep places. In other words, they're all sort of grungy.
Yeah, well, what happened was Show World started the thing with the tokens,
okay.
That octagon token. And the reason being was the junkies were breaking into the coin boxes. And these guys would try anything to beat them. They drill a hole in a quarter and put a string through it, try to do this shit.
Right.
So they came up with this electronics whiz came up with the token. And like Show World basically had a couple other ones, like Less Girls was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a few, and everybody used the Show World token because it was you know, they break in and rob the tokens, what are you going to get? And if somebody was selling tokens, it was either an employee or somebody who robbed the box.
Right.
Their big problem was they didn't want the machines destroyed. Because you really couldn't get it out, but you could destroy where it was coming in.
Someone go with their crowbar and rip apart the whole booth and put it out of commission.
Yeah, so that was their big thing.
Now, do you remember the first time you saw a hardcore film or some hardcore imagery or at least something early like that?
Yeah. Actually, it wasn't hardcore. Something fucked up. It was San Francisco Ball, and I'm pretty sure I saw it at the Venus, and it was the Eros 2 then, which was a real grungy, roughy type thing where we didn't know what we were getting into, and it was like, okay, this was a libido killer because it was basically these guys grab these two chicks, rape them, and hold them for ransom and cut them up with switchblades.
Okay.
It's all soft core, but it's more unnerving because these chicks are lying on the floor whimpering, covered with stage blood, and these guys are standing over them with no pants on.
Right.
Holding these knives. And it's
right.
Like, okay, this is really fucked up.
Right. You'd never seen anything that harsh before. Right.
No, that was fucked up.
Right.
Then I'm trying to think. See, I was dealing loops.
Okay.
When I was 17.
Okay. And so these are before the peep booths and stuff like that, so it's like stag films.
Yeah, stag films.
Okay.
I was dealing the stuff.
That's interesting. Now, how did you get involved in that, and where did the stag films come from?
Well, basically, when I was growing up, there was no such thing as sex education. That was it. Your parents were going to tell you, yeah, you got a life-size picture of that. So, and they had supposedly had...
Particularly Catholic parents.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's where it was. So I was hanging out at the... 8-track tapes were big when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is the shittiest format ever made for music. But anyway...
Halfway through the song, click into the next track.
One of the stores I was hanging out in, there was a guy, they used to call him Chucky from Kentucky. He was one of these guys that sold loops, French ticklers, books, and stuff like that. So I was buying, you know, we were buying loops all for $10 a piece. This was our sex education. So I had started dealing bootleg 8-track tapes because that was a big thing back then.
Okay.
And one day when I'm at my source, I look up, and at the top shelf, I see these telltale white boxes. And I knew what the fuck they were. So I'm like, how much do you want for them? And he goes, well, the black and whites are $7 and the colors are 10, but if you buy a case. So I started buying them.
Okay.
Call up all my friends. We'd watch them. Then I'd sell them.
And just to clarify for people, again, who don't know, the white boxes contain
8mm
single reels of 8mm films. And how long a film was on that reel?
200 feet.
Okay. So it's like 3 minutes or something?
No, we figure closer to 10. Yeah, about 10
minutes. No, it's 50 feet for 3 minutes, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, closer. Anywhere from 10 to 15.
Okay, and that was a standard size for a loop at that time.
They were white boxes.
They came in a white little white cardboard box.
Something stenciled on one side. You know, it was Eros 1 or whatever. There'd either be a black and white photo in the black and white film or a color photo in the color film.
Okay.
Then they had progressed where they were shrink-wrapped with a photo over them.
Okay.
Then it got into the whole, you know, as we got closer, you know, closer toward the 80s, almost to the era of VHS, where they'd have them in, like, the Swedish erotica boxes, the display boxes that we know about.
Full-color packaging
full color
and whatnot.
Things like that. But I had bailed out about when they were doing the shrink wrap stuff.
Okay.
I'd stopped selling
So when
stuff.
You got involved with these things, they were also considered, if I'm not mistaken, basically illegal.
Oh, yeah. If I got caught, I was done.
Right.
Yeah.
This was obscene pornographic material, and it was you get busted for it.
Oh, yeah. You go to jail for it.
Yeah.
There was no doubt about it. I never got caught, though. Some of my best customers were motor vehicle inspectors and cops.
Right.
So I never got busted.
So you were just a kid, but you were selling them to adults at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how much did they go for?
I was never greedy when I was hustling stuff. I'd throw $5 on each one.
Yeah.
And do it like that. You know, the color one was 15, the black and white one was 12.
Yeah. This is 1960s money, so $5 is worth more than $5.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But it was some kind of investment.
Everybody says, well, even when I was working off the books back in the 70s, I was working for $2 an hour. And I go, $2 an hour? I go, that's 70s money.
Yeah.
My unemployment was $50 a week. That was my check.
Right.
So $2 a week off the books was good money.
Right. And any sense how these guys were viewing those films at that time? Did you ever go to an event where somebody screened these films?
No,
we used to
run them all the time. When we used to have card games, we'd have them running in the background.
Okay.
So, you know, that would distract from the card game, which sometimes it was good because I got to the point where I got so jaded the shit didn't even faze me anymore. So I could concentrate on what I was doing and let these guys, you know, get off.
It was a good strategy to help you win your card game.
But every once in a while, something would go on where everybody would have like a holy shit moment, you know, and you just everybody would be rapt attention, like the Linda Lovelace dog film. That was one of them.
Right.
Of course, we didn't know it was Linda Lovelace then. Oh, it's a dog. Look at this shit.
Right.
So.
Right.
That was another thing. They were in New York, they were after their basic big busts were bestiality. That's what they were looking for the most. That and kiddie stuff.
Okay.
Bestiality was the big one. That's what they were always looking for.
Although there was also a surprising amount of it. I've encountered my own research. A lot of the peep booths had signs, you know, girl screws, donkey, girl stuffs an eel, upper pussy, or something like
that. Yeah,
that
was Crossroad Books was notorious for that.
There were certain places where you're more likely to find them than
others. Crossroads was the one. The urban myth is it was firebombed because it was so fucked up. But the whole deal was, I think Beam was in office. And they wanted that gone, and there was a hotel that was real close to it, the Belmont, Hooker Hotel.
Okay.
High crime area. But Crossroad Books, we wandered into that place one night, and it was like they had the big, you know, cutout cards over the thing, girl with pig, oink, oink, white girl with black dog, black girl with white dog, girl with horse. Then they had the snuff film. Now, here's the segue, because everybody says I'm full of shit when I say this, but... And then they say, you did drink a lot back then. I go, yeah, but I was never that drunk because you didn't want to be that drunk because you could wind up getting stabbed somewhere if you weren't careful.
Right.
So we go into this and we see the thing. It says snuff, the bloodiest thing on 42nd Street. So we're like, okay, so three of us squeeze in a booth, which was a no-no anyway, but fuck it, you know. Put the quarter in. The first thing you see this chick getting whipped and she's bleeding. Now we go to the second corner. They're sticking a serrated steak knife in her pussy and sawing upward. Now, like I said, I was a meat cutter for the A&P. There was no special effects back then. This was raw meat. So, like, one of the guys is turning green. He's out the door. I'm like, okay, I'm done too. So that was real. And about 2 weeks later, that place closed down, I believe.
Interesting.
And they were always getting hit for kiddie porn or something. It was like, if anybody saw 8mm, the scene where They go to that like underground thing in Mexico or something where they're looking for all this illegal shit.
Yeah.
That was Crossroad Books.
Okay.
That's the type of shit they had there.
In terms of kiddie porn, was that something that always remained kind of underground at 42nd Street, or were there places that publicly sold and displayed stuff that you thought, you know, was kiddie porn?
There may have been, but I'm dead set against it, so I never paid attention to it. I didn't want to know nothing.
Okay.
It was one of those things that like I had my own store and I had a guy come in and adamantly claim that he knew I could get it and why wouldn't I get it for him. And I said, you better fuck off. And I just turned around and started walking away from him. The guy spun me around and I punched him out.
Okay.
And he actually called the cops. And when the cops came, I says, before you even talk to me, ask him what he asked me to get the beating.
Right.
And that was the end of it. Nothing ever happened to me. They took him out. I never saw him again.
Right.
So yeah, I'm down on that. You know, you want to fuck a dog? Fine. I don't give a shit. But you fuck with a kid, I will fuck you up.
Okay.
And of course, a kid has to appear on screen now. But what the fuck?
Now, how did you get involved in 42nd Street on a business basis? Because you worked at least in New York in stores that were selling this stuff, right?
I was always hustling stuff, and my bigger boon came from the video, when it hit video.
Okay.
Because, let me see, when it first came out, it was $100 for a video cassette.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, but I've seen ads.
Oh, yeah, I still have them. I knew there was...
This is in the later 70s. Again, talk about do the currency conversion. It's probably twice that much now.
What happened was there was a lot of bootleg stuff out there for 50. What they would do is they get a big clamshell case, photocopy, you know, the cover off the original box and slip it in there and they get $50 for it. But that, you know, that wasn't the way I wanted to go because, you know, it was garbage. So I knew I could sell this stuff, but I just couldn't connect with it. So I saw an ad. It was in Jersey. I went down South Jersey, Neptune. And this guy had 30-minute VHS, 60-minute and features. 30 minutes were $7, 60 minutes were 10, and features were 15.
Okay.
So I figured with the 30 and the 60s, I could make money. So again, I only threw $5 a piece on them. Then the features dropped to 12. So okay, so we took a few of them. You get 20, no problem. Then the guy calls me up and he goes, I got a deal on features for $6. I'm going to send you 50 of them. I go, okay. They dropped them on the third speed. They were horrible. That SLP speed.
Okay.
So I call him up and I'm like, you're getting them back. I'm not taking them.
This terrible low resolution image, right?
That leads into another fucked up story. Do you remember Toys R Us getting in trouble for selling cartoons with porn on the end of them?
No, I don't.
Okay. He remembers. What happened was I wasn't the only one who sent this shit back. So the guy's name was Lou, who owned the company. It was Video Warehouse in Neptune, New Jersey. I can say because he's probably dead now, and plus he got busted for something else.
Okay.
So he had his wonderful crew of alcoholics and junkies working for him. So he told them, because he got the rights to all these public domain cartoons that were like maybe 20 minutes, to take these 30-minute tapes, copy the cartoons over them, and let them run out. Well, the jerk-offs didn't let them run out. They cut them out of 20 minutes, spun them out. So here's this kid watching Popeye and some chick sucking somebody's dick.
At the end of
so,
it,
So, yeah, that was sort of the end of Lou.
I see.
Yeah, there was a lot of shit going on like that. So that was the end of Lou. But then the segue was you'd bounce around because it was 300 movies, Adam, Limelight, and companies like that, that somehow – these guys got, and it was like, who had them for $8, who's got them for $7, who's got them for $6, who's got them for $5, who changed the box, who did this, who did that. So basically, toward the end, you can get them for $1.50.
All right.
Yeah.
So a lot of different distributors or vendors wound up handling the same films. Yeah. You were just chasing around the cheaper.
Yeah, because there was no rights to these things at all.
Right.
You know, you couldn't fuck with Swedish Erotica or Caballero or VCA, but these other ones, there was no rights, and they just kept changing the packaging year after year and throwing them out new, and it was the same shit. Then, like I said, the drop speeds were killing them too.
Were they releasing them under all these different titles too? You're constantly finding films that someone claims had these crazy titles on video.
Oh, yeah.
They just throw some title on to re-release it, basically.
Yeah, they knock off the original title and put something else on, then change the date on the box.
Right.
So, you know, okay, this is a 1985 film that was shot in 63 or something.
Right.
There was all kinds of crap on there. I'm sure that if I had the stuff now, there'd probably be some gems in there that we don't even have, but yeah.
Right. A lot of lost films are probably kicking around on these obscure old tapes. Yeah. Did you have any particularly favorite Times Square type theaters, you know, during the hardcore days where there were so many cinemas whose names have become well known. Did you check out all of the big adult releases at that time? You know, even Cinelito and those places that were showing Radley Metzger type films. And
well, Insatiable was the biggie. You had to go see Insatiable. That was like a world premiere, and that's one of the only films I actually stood in line to get in. That was at the Pussycat on Broadway.
Okay.
That was like an event. Marilyn was there. She wasn't there when we got there, but, you know, it was a second show. The World Theater was good. They had a lot of premieres, a lot of stuff showed there.
Okay. These theaters inside weren't Fleabag theaters, right? These were basically legit theaters showing adult
films. Yeah, they were
films.
Just run down. They were run down. I mean, you know, like the Pussycat was new. Pussycat was a brand new theater.
Right.
Some of them were, you know, reconditioned theaters, stuff like that. World Theater was just an old theater. It was non-threatening. Avon Hudson was another one. It was off to the side and non-threatening. Your real shitholes were on 42nd, you know, and some other places like that.
Right.
Some places you just, you know, you didn't want to go.
Like, what's that one that was the ANCO I've heard stories about?
Oh, the ANCO was fucked up. I got robbed. I got fucking robbed. I never went back. I got robbed in the ANCO.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was right down the end near Port Authority, I understand.
Yeah, it was right across. It was on a corner of 42nd and 8th, right across from Port Authority.
Okay.
Yeah, so you had to pass it.
That was one of the scarier places.
Yeah, and that's where if you got robbed, the guy would run out the back door and go. On that one side, there was alleyways connecting the whole deal. So this guy could book out the chain snatchers used to do it. They grab somebody's chain, run out the back door. You'd call the cops. The cops couldn't get these guys. They'd be in another theater by the time they got there.
They went out the back of the theater, you're saying there were the alley behind the theater connected all the theaters on the block.
Yeah, it was all in one alley.
So you could just sneak in and out of the theater.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So the theaters also, I mean, is it fair to say, at least after a while, the 42nd Street theaters anyway were kind of like these dens of vice or pickpockets and drug dealers were hanging out?
It got that way. Like, I may be getting ahead of myself, but to me, the most prophetic title ever slapped on a 42nd Street marquee was Make Them Die Slowly, because when that came out, I believe it was 81, that's when the whole area started, you know, dying.
Okay.
And being, you know, psychotic. I mean, with crack, AIDS, the realtors, all the other stuff.
This is getting into the 80s, maybe, early 80s?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't safe, because I was married most of the 80s, so I go over, but not to the extent that I was going over.
Right.
And I had to behave myself for obvious reasons.
Right.
But, it was starting to get to the point where you just didn't want to go there. Plus, when video came out, that was the end. Because even with the Grindhouse stuff, who's going to take, you know, your life in your own hands going down to see, you know, a horror movie or an exploitation movie where you can rent the damn thing?
Right.
So that was like putting, you know, a hole in them. And then they switched over to that shit video projection a lot of the places with the adult. So
the cinemas themselves, yeah. I remember very much toward the end of the run in the combat zone up in Boston, and I was living in that area at the time. I went into the Pilgrim Theater, which was the last remaining, you know, a real adult theater. It had been an old movie palace from the 20s, and I went in there a year or two before it closed, and they were doing video projection. It was so dark in there, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face because that video image has no real luminosity to it. And naturally, you know, you couldn't even find a seat to sit down. It was very creepy.
Yeah, yeah. That was trying to think. There was one like that in New York. Might have been the Rialto.
But at some time, of course, I'm pretty sure it was in the mid-80s in general, most of the porn producers just stopped making porn films on film. Because the whole industry went over to video very rapidly at that point. So I don't even think the cinemas, there weren't even 35 millimeter films for them to show anymore. They almost had to start showing video after a certain point.
Yeah, they went into that horrible video projection.
And then they went out of business because it became pointless.
Yeah, because it got down. They were closing them. Like, especially in New York, they were using the AIDS thing. It was big. What they did was,
they would close the theaters down because they said AIDS might be spread there.
Well, see, it was a weird situation because the first things to go were the gay bathhouses.
Right.
They were done. They wiped them out. Okay. Now, what happened was, if you see that movie Taxi Driver, there's Variety photo plays. That's on the Lower East Side.
Right.
That's where the cruise scene wound up with the gays. But it was a straight movie theater.
Right.
So what the city would do is they'd hire people, put detectives in there to document sex acts, and when they got enough evidence, they'd close the theater down. That's what they used.
Right.
So they do a lot with that. Even when the Venus, which they used to call the Venus the Hobo Hilton, because, you know, after a certain time of night, it was $5.
Yep.
And the place opened at 10 in the morning and closed at 7 in the morning.
Right. So if you needed a place to sleep.
Yeah, I got stuck over there a couple of times, not just because I was too fucked up to go home or I missed the last bus or something like that. So, yeah.
So for $5, you knew you could crash there at least for five hours until you could get a bus in the morning or something.
Well, a couple of times that I did it, it was starting to rain out. And it was like, okay, I have three choices. Port Authority, where you're going to get rousted, because it was Port Authority used to be open 24 hours. It started only open to 1 o'clock in the 80s when all the shit started going down.
Right.
They used to, because the parking, we used to park up there from Jersey. Now all of a sudden they had gates to close, so you were fucked. So one time it was raining, and I'm like, okay, Port Authority's out. The only other place, and it was an after hours, you're on the Lower East Side. I would have been soaked by the time I got there, and the Venus was the only other spot, so you wound up at the Venus.
Okay.
So that was, you know.
The street culture on 42nd Street, particularly during the 70s, I mean, you mentioned Taxi Driver, and yeah. You get some sense of it. Was it like that? It seemed kind of wild, like you never knew.
Saturday night was Wild West City. The weekends were Wild West City over there. It was packed.
Okay.
And the hookers were there, the pimps, the druggies, the muggers. It was all there. You know, you had to, like, I always said I had the attitude, because I always carried that I don't fuck with me attitude. Plus, I'm 6'2". I was like 220 then. I was in relatively good shape, and people rarely fucked with me.
Yeah.
You know. But if you were over there and you looked like a tourist, and you were smiling and looking at all the shit and laughing, they knew you were a mark, and they were going to take you off.
Right.
And that was the bottom line. And everybody goes, well, they used to have some good drugs over there. I go, yeah, if you like baking soda and oregano, because nobody on 42nd Street, as far as I know, was selling anything any good.
So even the drug market was sort of a scam over there.
Oh, yeah, everything was a scam. I mean, I saw these guys, I had a hot TV story. These guys must have got a Sony box from Crazy Eddie they threw out in the back, and they probably put bricks in it, taped it up. And I don't know if you remember where the Antco was, where you had to walk by. They used to call them the shoe sign stands from hell.
I don't remember, but
okay,
go ahead.
There was a parking lot, and there was a bunch of shoe sign stands in front of it, and they were like open 24/7. So these college kids were there, and this black guy was hustling with the TV, and the deal was like, oh yeah, we got five of these around the corner. We want like $100 a piece, this and that, and the other thing. So these kids thought they were shrewd and talked them down. So they're like, oh, we'll go with you. I'm watching this, and you know, I'm digging the whole thing. So I go, no, we can't. We got them in a van around the corner. I'll tell you what, just we'll give you the five of them for $200. You can keep this one here. We'll be back. So the assholes peeled off the 200, and they're still waiting there, as far as I know. They weren't coming back. Yeah, it was an old trick.
So they'd throw some bricks or something in the box, give it some weight.
Tape it shut, and here it is. There used to be a lot of it. And then the shoe shine stands, you know, basically anybody, you had to be crazy to get your shoe shine there, because they just sized you up to see whether you're worth robbing or not.
Okay.
And one of the cops, I remember, told me that they used to bust these guys for selling wine after hours, that the bottoms of the stands were full of cheap wine and stuff like that.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, I assume you saw a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts.
Yeah.
It was just a hangout place, as far as I can tell, you know.
Well, somebody said, you know, it wasn't so much what was going on, it was the riffraff that was over there to begin with.
Okay.
Because some people were just there. They were derelicts.
Right.
You know, and it's like somebody a lot smarter than I said, you know, there's a certain percentage of people in the world that are going to get fallen down, stinking, drunk, in the gutter, no matter what you do for them. And that was probably the case over there.
Right.
Plus, like I said,
for some reason, this is just where they would go to hang out. It was their space.
You know what it is? There was a lot of shitty bars, nasty bars. Like you had the Terminal Bar right across from Port Authority.
Okay.
It was like, you know, criminal haven. And you had the Terminal Hotel, which had the ugliest $5 whores in America. you had Tops Bar down the other end, which was another, you know, everybody got released from Rikers Island, wound up at Tops. All the pimps used to hang down there. They dumped the hookers down at the other end, and that's where they'd all be. And that was, you know, it was almost like, remember the 18th century taverns where you used to get, like, shanghaied or killed or thrown out the back door?
Yeah, sure.
That's what Tops was.
Okay.
That, you know, pretty much a modern-day Tops.
All right.
So.
And the prostitutes, I mean, they were brazen enough to turn tricks in theaters and probably in alleys, but were they pretty much working out of these fleabag hotels like you see in Taxi Driver?
Yeah.
The area must have been full of these old transient hotels.
Oh, yeah. My first time was like the Green Lantern Hotel on 8th Avenue. I got the bridal suite for $15.
Great time. Yeah. Great name. Yeah.
And that was a horrible fucking experience for a first-time hooker, because this chick was nasty. She was blowing me in the middle of the blowjob. She pulled out a wad of bazooka bubble gum and threw it in the sink. Then I started pumping away at her, and she cut a fart that I swear she had lived on a diet of prune Danish and chili, and that was fucking it. Immediate loss of hard on. I'm out the fucking door, and that was the end of it. So that was my first hooker experience over there.
For $15.
Yeah, for 50. No, but I had to give her money, too. It was
that was the room.
Yeah, more like 30. You know, more like 30.
Right.
So then I never. You shouldn't take the streetwalker bait, because you can get screwed. Because like a lot of it's a setup. Because you'd be in a room, like it would never happen to me because I never fell for it. But a couple guys I know, like they'd be naked on the bed, and all of a sudden the door opened, and this big black guy would come in saying, "What are you doing with my wife?"
Yeah.
So, you know, here you are, balls ass naked in front of this mean black man. And what are you going to do? Like, not hand over your wallet?
Yep.
And then the other scam was, guy would approach you, like, especially in Port Authority, like in a bowling alley and shit. Oh, you know, you're looking to go out, this and that. And the other thing, I know what, some high class girls. They take you to a place. The guy go, oh, give me $10 a piece. I'm going to go in and set it up. Wait 10 minutes to come to room 15. So the dummies would do it, go up, knock on the door, and some old Hispanic lady would answer the door. It wasn't even in on the deal. The guy would have been out the fire escape. So there was all kinds of scams. One of them used to hang in front of one of the adult bookstores on 8th Avenue. I got one of them because this chick goes, oh, you want to go out? $15. I go, where? She goes, in here. Walk through the back. There's a curtain. Here's the room. It was crazy. Then the massage parlors.
Oh, yeah, which were everywhere.
Oh, yeah, those were great. Well, then again, and they were and they weren't.
We were speaking about Screw magazine earlier, too. I mean, the ads for the massage parlors are incredible. It's, you know, $10, full service, whatever.
Yeah, bullshit. Don't believe that. Because I went.
How did they work? Do you know?
I went to one called the Dating Room on 42nd Street. Okay. And it was like, you know, the $12 to get in. You get a membership card, though.
Okay.
Plus reduces your visits to 10. So I pick up this big-titted biker chick named Sonny, and I'm like, okay, I'm in. She goes, how much you want to tip? And I'm like, what? She goes, oh, yeah. So I'm like, okay, that didn't include fucking shit. Just got in here. So she was cool, and she goes, well, how much you got? And I go, well, I need $3 to get my car out of Port Authority, so it leaves me with $8. So she gave me a blowjob for $8.
Right.
So I was grateful. I says, look, I work for a sweater company. I'll throw you something. She goes, yeah, right. So I did. I, you know, always have the run going into the city.
Yep.
Because they wanted to keep me at this warehouse for some reason. They lay everybody else off in the winter, but I was good. They wanted to keep me. So I liberated a couple sweaters, gave them to her. That's where I met Leon. Leon, she told Leon I was okay. And every time I'd get the mail run, I'd make some excuse about, stuck in traffic. I'm going to pull over for a couple minutes, run up there, get a blowjob, and come back. Unfortunately, one of the owners of the company I ran into in the same massage parlor, so I got taken off the mail run.
Okay.
So that was the end of the Dating Room. Then the Dating Room got busted and turned into Tanfastic.
Tanfastic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which basically, you went into a room. There was a shower stall full of fluorescent lights. You go in there, the chick would turn on the lights, turn them off. She goes, now you got your tan. What else you want? And it was like a shag rug on the floor and a pillow.
Yeah, I understand that the city was always trying to figure out how to get rid of these places.
Yeah.
So they called them massage parlors. And then I think the city required you to have a license. A massage license, but they immediately then turned them into like rap studios or photo studios.
The topless shoe shine joint. Remember that one?
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
great.
That was another one.
So they would just constantly keep reinventing themselves as providing different types of services, but the bottom line, the service was their
they all had a hook. There was a place called the Luxury Baths, and it was basically this rundown hotel, and the chicks would man the elevators. You get in the elevator with the chick you wanted to go up to whatever floor. Toward the end, the elevators were unmanned. You'd pay somebody at the desk $10 to go up, and there was nothing.
Okay.
Then the topless shoe shine joint, like I told you. Then there was Holiday Hostesses. Was it Holiday Hostesses? One of the places had 6 pup tents pitched where you'd go in the pup tent and screw the chick.
That's class.
Yeah. Perfect for the Times Square outdoorsman, you know?
That's class. What happened to the old 42nd Street, and how do you feel when you go over there to Times Square these days?
Nauseated. Very nauseated and very depressing. They were trying to shut 42nd Street down since the turn of the century because all those big theaters were actually they were Broadway-type theaters. They went belly up. The Brandt brothers bought those theaters and ran grindhouses. I think The Victory was their only porn one. And
even that went over late, too.
Yeah. But they controlled it, and basically the guys who ran the Avon chain, Chelly Wilson and them, I believe it was, what the hell was the guy's name?
A guy named Murray.
Murray, okay. Murray was her right-hand man, and he was the one who took out all those cheap multi-year leases in all these places.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, nobody can make a go of it on 42nd Street unless you were selling weapons, porn, or whatever, or had a theater.
Why do you think that was? I mean, right in the middle of New York City, why was it so hard to get
a legit business
in there?
Because you get robbed.
It was such a bad element that only certain businesses could thrive there. Okay.
Yeah. It was like, you know, cheap liquor store would work there, and people wouldn't fuck with it because they didn't want the booze place closed up. But, you know, you had PIA Books was the first porn weapons hybrid store, which sold fake IDs and switchblades and gravity knives and brass knucks and nunchucks and shit.
Right.
So they wanted it gone for a while. It's just the leverage they had was.
Who's the they? The city?
The city. Beam tried it. Every mayor tried it and failed. The story I got was, and I could be wrong, and I've had arguments with people over this, that Giuliani put pressure on the landlords not to renew the leases. We'll have a better deal for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what they did. They didn't renew the leases. Then they were pulling the shit with the, you know, putting the vice cops in there, documenting sex acts,
right,
the AIDS thing. You know, crack was the death of the whole thing. Because these people just were fucking psychos.
Right.
Yeah.
It was much too dangerous.
Yeah.
And I don't imagine they had any money to pay for any of the services that were there.
No, they rip you off. That was the whole thing. It was just getting really bad. That's why Port Authority closed at 1 o'clock in the morning. Because these right. people would like to be sleeping in the stairwells and shit.
Yeah, it was like Night of the Living Dead over yeah. there at that time.
I can remember getting out of an elevator and stepping over two people that were out of it, completely comatose.
Right.
So.
Right.
There's a lot of shit that was going down. You know, I had the argument. I was up at Cinema Wasteland, and me and Jeff Lieberman were always going toe-to-toe about it. And Dave Friedman was on the panel. And, you know, the bottom line is, why would anybody go over there when you can see the shit in your own home now?
When the video came
yeah.
along. So you think video helped to kill the
oh,
whole...
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. It just right. flatlined it because, you know that was your little... Even if you bought the loops, you had a projector, you had to rig up all this thing. Here it was plopping into a thing and you're watching it.
Sure. And by its nature... Even a 400-foot reel of film, even a bigger reel,
yeah.
you can't get a feature on there. So
nah.
one video cassette, you could watch a whole feature film, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, and no.
You can fast
no
forward,
messy.
You know, the whole bit. You know, how many guys burned out their VCRs by fast forward and reversing
right.
them, you know? You could always tell a porn aficionado by his remote right. control where the fast forward button would be worn down flush with it or something like that.
So I assume you were down... I assume you were down 42nd Street then in the 80s at that time when all the theaters were blacked out and everything was closed
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
it must have been like a ghost town.
Yeah, it was starting one after another. It was like you go over there and you just see, you know, like this one would close, that one would close, and guys were vending and dealing drugs out of like, you know, store. What the hell were they? Like the closed up stores, the shit, the alcoves. That's what they, you know.
Okay,
yeah.
They'd just be standing there.
Yeah, doing stuff like that, selling bootleg videos
right.
and things. So, but it was a ghost town. There was nothing there. It wasn't even worth walking up. It was almost depressing.
It's sort of a sense like that they gave it a couple of years to just dry up so that all the bad element would blow away gradually.
Yeah, the only thing that was left, I think it was Peepland, was the only one that held out for the longest.
Okay.
And then I equated the whole thing to me came to a crashing end in 2003, right after 9/11, because that was another, you know, fixture there. But Peepland was finally closed. Liquidators that I worked for, the owner died. We went out of business and Screw went out of business. So to me, 2003 was the absolute end.
That whole era was over at that
yeah.
point.
Yeah. There was still a bunch of them hanging on. You know, Liquidators was like, Norman Brill was the owner. He was old school 42nd Street. He had worked on there too. And we were a big wholesale porn distributor.
Yep.
And we were, you know, the creaky floors, the fucking ceiling falling in, the whole bit. We were like one of the old time peep shows. But when he died, that was it. And nobody stepped in. I was supposed to take it over. It was a handshake agreement. His family didn't want to hear it, so that was the end of that.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's still stuff going on over there, but it's not the same. It's never going to be the same.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you that. How do you feel now about the porn business now and the kind of products they put out as opposed to the adult industry in the 70s and 80s? Is it different for you, better,
oh,
worse?
Oh, yeah, it's worse. It's horrible. I can't watch this stuff today. There's no heart and soul in it. These chicks actually... think they're stars. I mean, you know, if you market yourself right, you are a star. Look at Jenna Jameson. She's a cottage industry. But back when it was early, these people had to have some mokum of acting ability. Like Vanessa Del Rey had it. Veronica Hard had it. A bunch of them had it. Sika, Lisa DeLu. They could carry off a little bit of acting along with it, and that went a long way. This is just like you pick up a DVD today. It's five scenes, spread your legs, cum shot, and that's it. There's no heart to it. At least there was something... And the other thing, too, is the chicks are too perfect.
Yeah.
It's like I did an interview with Vanessa
Del Rey. Implants yeah. and that's, yeah.
I did an interview with Vanessa Del Rey for the Something Weird Blue Book Sloppy Seconds. And she just said it. You know, all these people like cookie cutter blondes just all stamped out and they all look the same.
Right.
I mean, I went to that expo down in Edison last year and like I couldn't tell anybody from different. It's
oh,
like
that it was like a big sex convention.
Sex expo, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All big titted blondes with different tattoos. I couldn't tell one from the other. All mercenary, you know, $10 for a picture, you know, what the hell? It's not the way it used to be.
Right.
So, I you know, it's like anything else. Once you commercialize it and make it corporate, it sucks, and that's exactly what happened now. That's why I sort of revel in finding, like, stuff like Kinkorama, the older stuff, you know, is these are natural women.
Right.
You know, and the other thing was, too, you look at these guys are non-threatening. You're just fucking geeks like anybody, and, you know, the whole... thing was that nobody seems to get was for the porn customer, there was always hope that if these guys are getting laid, I can get laid too. And these chicks are not, you know, they're not supermodels, so maybe I can score them too. That mystique is shot.
Right.
You know?
Now it's become completely standardized, yeah. Completely professionalized.
Right. I mean, there's nothing to it.
And it seemed
a guy like that wouldn't work, you know?
Right. And it seemed like with films like this, part of what's great about them is the element of surprise. You don't really know what you're going to see. Even when it comes down to you don't know what kind of people you're going to find in the films, you know?
Yeah. I honestly think today's, you know, just going by, because I'm still in the business, so, you know, I still dabble here and there, not only with what I do, you know, on After Hours and my own line and stuff like that. Yeah. But I still wheel and deal in the business, and it's like, the stuff has nothing to me. I look at the boxes and like, I have no desire to see it, just to sell it. And I basically pick my inventory from what I think will sell. And I got a pretty good eye for it, so it works.
Right.
I've always had for some reason.
What kind of stuff is selling right now? And is it different from
everything
the kind of stuff
weird.
That you
everything
like?
Weird. Okay. I can't sell a straight fucking DVD to save my life. Okay. If it's bondage, fetish, she-male, gay, or bi, it'll sell. And it's mainly to the Midwest.
Okay.
Around here, nothing.
Okay.
I got a couple stores I deal with around here, but as far as eBay, internet, person to person, around the East Coast, nothing.
So things with a kind of a freak or a kind of fetish value.
Yeah, because it's new. It's
curiosity,
you know it is.
About it.
It's new out in the Midwest. It's old here because this whole area is so jaded. And you walk in some of these convenience stores and you can see the 6-hour comps for $3.99 on a magazine rack.
Right.
It killed it. So.
And I'm sitting here with my computer in front of me. The internet seems to have had a big impact on all of this as well.
Well, you know what it is? And as a businessman, you got to know your audience. And with the internet, you go on a porn site, you're leaving footprints. It's like anything else. A lot of people want to be anonymous. The whole reason why the business got shit on for a lot of years is because the consumer itself are not going to come forward and speak up for the business because it's an embarrassment to
them.
Everybody has their own little fucking quirk and they don't want it out in the open.
Right.
Me, I don't give a shit.
Very grateful for the opportunity I had to sit here and talk to you, Pete. It's been a real education, and it's very rare to find a guy who was part of that whole scene and who paid as much attention to it as you did as well. It's been fascinating for me to listen to you, so I want to thank you for having spent time with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And I know people learned a lot from it. And if people want to find out more, Pete, about what you're doing, is there someplace they can go to get that information?
Well, you can go to www.42ndStreetPete.com. We post stuff up there, the new releases and stuff. That segues you into MySpace, where I blog a lot. And just started a radio show with Todd Sheets as my producer. It's on www.jackalope105fm.com every Saturday night at 10 p.m. EST. It's uncensored. We talk about just about everything, porn, grindhouse, politics. We even brought back a great American tradition, in my estimation, the shit list that I borrowed from Screw. So
from
we have
Al
the weekly
Goldstein.
Shit list.
Okay, great.
So, and it's just about, you know, as nuts as I am right here, I'm even worse there because, like I said, it's uncensored. And, you know, we do what we got to do. And, you know, the whole point of this whole thing is trying to keep this era alive, because a lot of people are trying, especially in the horror industry, the remakes and the revisions, and they're trying to almost say, like, none of this shit ever existed. Well, 8mm, 16mm, this is the bastard child, or grandparent, rather, of the DVD today.
Sure.
That's how it all started, you know, and it's important to realize that. And some of these people, you know, they're no longer with us, unfortunately. People like Marilyn Chambers, Linda Lovelace, John Holmes, they all made their impact. And some people are still around and are still, you know, viable in the business. So everything has a history. And I think this has a really interesting history, a really interesting demographic. And I know a lot of people didn't document it for a lot of reasons, but I try to keep on top of it, you know, and we try to give back, you know, a little history of everything we do here. So it's been my pleasure, dude.
Terrific. And I think it's been a great, great conversation. So thanks very much. Be sure to check out 42nd Street Pete's website if you want to find out more about what he's doing, because there's always something new and interesting there. Very good. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Take care.